Well, hello there, Richard Tubb here, and I'm joined today by Andy Redman, who is the principal consultant at Pax8 EMEA. How are you doing today, Andy?
Really good, thanks, Richard. Yeah, great to be here. It's my debut appearance on the Tubb Talk, and hopefully not my last, but yeah, I'm really pleased to be here to chat to you.
I'm sure when people get to know you the way I've got to know you, they're going to want to hear a lot more from you. But I guess to jump straight in, tell us a little bit about your role, principal consultant. What does that mean? What does a typical day look like for Andy?
Yeah, a typical day really varies. But yeah, principal consultant means essentially that I very much get out of bed thinking about Pax8 partners and how, in particular, the pro services capability and the incredible technical talent we have here in the people we have at Pax8 can be translated into services that our NSP partners and the ecosystem we work with can best use, really. So yeah, every day is different, and we're learning every day, which is the best thing, but also really innovating, and we get to drive and steer some incredible consultancy offerings and some amazing enablement for our partners already. And it's every day is different because we're looking to bring more and more to that to help MSPs grow.
Yeah, it sounds like an exciting role. I'm really interested, before we jump into Pax8 Pro Services, I know MSPs have got lots of questions about that. What led you to this role? What's your background, Andy? How did you become a principal consultant?
Yeah, great question. So before I joined Pax8, it was through the acquisition of a company called Wirehive, which was the first acquisition on Pax8's global expansion now. Pre-Wirehive, so I joined Wirehive 7 years ago. Before that, the kind of rest is history, but I think it's probably important to mention I had 15 or so years of IT desktop support experience on the front lines, in the trenches,
right.
Everything from turning PCs off and on again through to changing keyboard batteries in wireless keyboards and things like that. Lived in the trenches across lots of different MSPs, value-added resellers, and enterprise businesses as well. And I got fed up in my career of commuting to London. So I was looking for more and more local companies to me. So I'm based in Farnborough, and an advert popped up for a service delivery manager job at the Wirehive team. At the time, 15 years of IT, desperate to be the manager of a support team finally after working really hard to be there. And within a year of being at Wirehive, it was a kind of testament to the culture, which is still very much the culture at Pax8 today. But within a year of that, from the psychometric profiling and the analysis we do on our people, the team there sort of identified that I would really excel in this Azure architect role that was coming about as we were transitioning to be more of a cloud consultancy from the old days of, traditionally Wirehive started in a garage as a really small MSP and turned into an Azure specialist at a ridiculous scale. But I did the Azure architect role at Wirehive for 6 or so years. Recently in the last couple of years or so, transitioned into this principal consultant, which is essentially getting less and less technical, although I'm still a techie at heart.
But, I was going to ask, do you still consider yourself, dare I say, a geek?
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the whole company is on a ridiculous level in terms of we're all nerds, and we have that culture here that everyone, no doubt everyone following you can resonate with what that feels like. You finally feel at home and you feel welcomed, and you're with people that are like you. And I have moved to the dark side, I suppose, a bit in terms of we talk more about commercial opportunity and the business strategy piece now, because cloud adoption has changed my role from, it used to be as an architect, how big do you need your server to suit a solution and what's the functional and non-functional requirements. Nowadays, it's really around, okay, well, how are your clients as a business going to change to adopt these amazing new data and AI opportunities, or even start to use Azure and understand the variable billing and all the intricacies that go with that. There's a more of a strategic shift that needs to be worked on, so that the role has become a new one in terms of, I don't think there's many people out there that do what I do in other disties, but I love it. And we've carved that opportunity there because we're essentially looking to help partners with their clients grow and adapt and embrace something innovative and new.
Yeah. Well, let's tackle something there. So you mentioned the D word, distributor. Now, I know Pax8 is traditionally known, perhaps not as a distributor, as like a cloud marketplace, something along those lines. And you've made a huge splash, especially in Europe. I've never seen anticipation for, a company like Pax8 coming to Europe as it did. And, you're making a number of friends all across Europe, especially here in the UK. But the pro services team, that's something that people don't know a great deal about at Pax8. So before we jump into that, tell us a little bit about what is Pro Services? How do you help MSPs?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think realistically, Pax8 I think it's really important to frame it as part of what Pax8 looks to do, because everyone here, whether you've come in from acquisition or a new hire into the Pax8 world, we all get up about out of bed, like I said, thinking about partners at the beginning of our day and looking to do the best we can for those partners. So ProServe, in the context of that, is us looking to combine not just the incredible software that we have and frankly, the people that underpin the Pax8 platform that makes us a great distributor. But what we're looking to do at Pax8 is really push the boundaries of what a partner in that ecosystem can do for people who work with us. So more and more around the expertise and the caliber of incredible architects and subject matter experts that we have in the Pro Services team are just part of that all our mission to be the best we can for our partners. So yeah, ProServe, we help people across modern workplace, of course, infrastructure and apps, data and AI, and business applications. So all four of the Microsoft key technology areas. And we help everything from strategic kind of conversations, like I said, that me and my team would get involved in around sitting around the board level with a client potentially and look at adoption and things like that, all the way through to then enablement, helping with migrations, extending the team of the partner to be able to carry those out, but also upskilling them to be able to take that in-house as well, essentially to add new revenue streams for the partners we work with. And then ongoing support in terms of critical application support to the very specific niche cases around 24/7 infrastructure on Azure that potentially the MSP can't do themselves in-house. We're always looking to basically extend what they can do and work for partners and through partners is a saying I say almost every day in terms of how we like to operate.
Yeah. So let me ask you a tough question. Pax8 Pro Services, does it compete with MSPs?
It's a great question. And I think it's a really important one to answer completely honest and transparently. But I could say categorically that we don't compete with any MSPs or, frankly, any other partners. So if you're a partner in the Pax8 ecosystem, we essentially have a rule that we never compete with a partner if there's an opportunity there. And frankly, it's very rare that we even get into the topic of that because we don't sell directly to brands. We work through partners and for partners, like I said, to basically extend the partner's team to add new streams to their revenue. And there's no, for example, an end customer of an MSP can't go to the Pax8 website, sign up themselves. They have to be an indirect reseller of Microsoft to be on board. They have to be a partner of some sort, whether that's an MSP, an SI, ISV, any of the XSPs, of course. You have to be in that, particularly in CSP, the Microsoft ecosystem, to be part of what we're doing. How we help those end customers. There's lots of incredible case studies and stories of the end clients we've helped, but it's always been working alongside and with those technical experts that hold those relationships at the partner level that we look to support. And frankly, doing anything other than that would be us stabbing ourselves in the back, right? Because it's an ecosystem we're building and we understand channel at Pax8. It's the first lesson that anyone gets in. If they've never worked in channel before, you sit in a room for 3 days until you understand how the channel works so you can understand who to support and what it's all about and just the incredible, like, I'm overwhelmed to go to industry events and things like that, just how everyone knows each other. It's awesome. I feel bad that I don't know everyone. I'm still trying to catch up from being part of the Pax8 world. But we're partner-centric and we absolutely don't compete with partners, just to be really clear on that.
Brilliant. Thank you for clarifying that and for answering so openly as well, because we have seen vendors come into this space before, talk about Pro Services, and then they compete with the MSPs. That is absolutely not the case here. So, you know, that's that one put to rest, which brings me on to, I guess, a bit of a soapbox topic of mine. I'm always speaking to MSPs about focusing on their core competencies and buddying up with other companies to provide services and solutions that they can't. So you've already mentioned Azure, there's a little bit of security in there. What other type of things can the Pax8 Pro Services team help MSPs with that perhaps, probably, I'm going to say, they don't have the skills in-house to do?
Yeah, it's a great question. So I mentioned modern workplace, infrastructure and apps, data and AI and business applications. Those are the four Microsoft competencies and kind of key technology areas. So we cover all of those, and we've got architects, modern sort of modern workplace specialists, all the way through to subject matter experts and engineers, and all the support you could need to extend your team in all of those areas. And how you tap into that as a partner, obviously, is be on board as a partner in the first place. talk to your channel account manager and work with the relationships there to understand basically how we could help with client projects and things like that. And that can either be very much advisory calls. We typically do a 30-minute free advisory call for any partner that's right. just looking for help, because we know people need help, right? Yeah. And it's not always about trying to sell something. So, then when we get into the paid-for assistance, it's either ad hoc project work or even a lot of partners are choosing to work with us on an ongoing relationship where essentially it's like a retained services model where you can have access to that incredible technical team. And one week, we work on 2-week sprints. So one sprint, you might be focusing on modern workplace for a particular client. Then you might want to tap into some data and AI and do some Power BI training and upskilling. So there's lots of flexibility there in terms of the model for how you purchase those services, or basically there's some free tier ones as well. In terms of the what kind of stuff we do, everything from strategy, readiness, which is a lot of it in terms of upskilling and understanding for clients to help our partners essentially understand where the opportunities are sometimes as well. We have incredible data at our fingertips that we can help unpick and help them in terms of sales and marketing, which I don't like to generalize, but the MSP market is one of those that we can see a lot of trends in, which a lot of our MSP partners do struggle with sales and marketing because they're typically technologists like I was that are fed up of working either in London or for a company that doesn't treat them well. So a lot of them become accidental business owners, we like to say, and that we can really dovetail with those types of the people that if you're working at 2 o'clock in the morning thinking how you're going to pay people and you're stressing as being a business owner, we understand that. We've seen that and basically Pro Services has the skills there, either from the strategy piece to help you run your business better, all the way through to actually helping you deliver client projects in a way that you take the revenue and outsource it to us whilst we upskill you. And then you can take that in-house either by hiring or upskilling the existing team, which is a great way because we love keeping that existing team growing and innovating. And we've got tens of thousands of partners in the Paxate ecosystem already worldwide. We don't need to work with every single partner constantly all the time. So we're developing services that can help short term. We can get involved and help and upskill and help you by outsourcing. There's all kinds of opportunities there with our go-to-market team that sits side by side with Pro Services that will help you find opportunities in your client base using some amazing Microsoft data. And then we'll move on to the next partner and help them too. So it's a great thing for me to be in that as much as I'm in the dark side a little bit now that I'm doing some pre-sales and helping partners with the commercial side of things, it's an easy sell because we don't try to maximize our revenue from our partners. It's about understanding what little can we do to accelerate you right now over a 90-day period potentially, or the next 12 to 18 months. Yeah. And then how do we set you on your own journey to continue that new trajectory yourselves?
This sounds like absolute gold, Andy. You know, you're aware I'm a former MSP business owner myself. If I rewind sort of 12, 15 years when I was running the MSP business, to find somebody of your talents, and you've got a whole team of like Andy's there ready to help people, but to find somebody of your talents was really, really difficult. We used to buddy up with, you know, senior people, senior technicians to get these type of skills. But if you're a Paxate partner, you can now come to yourselves and you've got a whole team of them available to you. That, at its simplest level, that sounds like absolute gold to me.
Yeah, sometimes it sounds too good to be true. That's the hardest thing with the pitch of it, right? But I think that comes from the incredible leaders, not just from the Wirehive days, but the Paxate team are exactly the same. And everyone I've worked with from leadership here has been saying yes to things that possibly we couldn't do the first time that they said yes to it. So we've opened up and said, look, what do you need? Let's figure out a way of delivering on that. And that was from a tech person in Wirehive days. That was really hard because we were a small company. Every new project was something we'd never done before for the first time, of course. And we built this muscle that basically was completely tuned to channel. That if you're a channel business trying to do things for end clients, we understand the consumer-driven digital landscape that your clients, although they're SMBs, they're competing with the expectations the enterprise set. So someone incredible like Jeff Bezos will come out and decide to start a bookstore. And that bookstore now sets the precedent for e-commerce everywhere. And for the local independent stores on the high street that need IT support and need that guidance, our partners are now fighting with Jeff Bezos on delivering incredible digital experiences for really small stores that don't have that capability. And that's just picking one particular niche and one industry, right? But it's such a such an issue there. And I'm to blame personally because I'm one of those demanding consumers. I expect same day delivery and I won't go to a petrol station unless I can pay on my app rather than go in the kiosks. Stupid things that we get
tied into these days. I think I'm exactly the same with you on that one. It drives things forward, which brings me to an interesting point, actually. If we cast our minds back to March 2020, I think it's a month that everybody's going to remember for the rest of their lives.
Yep.
But from a managed service provider perspective, of course, it's what I now refer to as the great working from home rush. So the pandemic hit, every MSP's client got in touch with them and said, can you enable us to work from home? Can you enable us to remote work? I even heard some MSPs, the clients came to them and said, can you flick that switch on for the cloud thing? So we can, oh yeah, we'll just do that for you. A very stressful time. But if we fast forward to now, there was some real good coming out of it, wasn't there, Andy? Because a lot of small businesses, a lot of organizations, full stop, sort of caught up with what MSPs have been talking about for a long, long time. They sort of got with the program, didn't they, for what yeah. word. And specifically now, you know, fast forward to today, MSPs are experiencing this glut of opportunities around what can best be termed as digital transformation. So we've already mentioned a couple of D words now, and we're playing buzzword bingo. But what does digital transformation mean to you, and what should it mean to MSPs?
I think it's an awesome question. For me, I have to be really frank that a lot of people tuning in to this or listening on the podcast, they'll think that's a buzzword, a marketing buzzword that no one really does, or certainly in SMB, it doesn't really exist. But I have to check myself sometimes because the stuff that we get access to and that I see happening on a daily basis isn't the norm. And I think I've got the privilege of being really ahead of that curve because we work with the most forward-thinking partners that come to us first. But we're starting to see trends because of that date that has really accelerated a need for transformation. And digital transformation, really everything's going to be digital because that's the de facto now, right? So for me, the important thing is that transformation is a really required skill from MSPs or any partners that are serving their clients that are working in this world that's being really radicalized and in terms of acceleration of cloud adoption and those types of things. It's a really difficult world to operate in unless you're able to have that transformation ability. So for me, I think one thing is about becoming a strategic partner in terms of a strategic advisor that can really be there for their partners to right. deliver on what they need and also consult them on things that they don't know they need. I think that's the biggest thing for me. A strategic advisor to the next step is really understanding things that your clients haven't yet asked for and piecing together solutions there to really consult them. Like, lots of great MSPs do the technology strategy and maybe like a technical director as a service type services.
Yeah.
Those are the ones that are really going to lead the way in terms of how digital transformation can impact change. And I think Lamara, one of the consultants here, coined a phrase a couple of weeks ago in one of our launch workshops for Pro Services that was for an MSP to survive, your clients now need to thrive. Yes. And I think that's a really, really nice kind of way of putting it, that it's not just about being good yourself now. You need your clients to be doing incredible work in their industries and really be client-centric to survive and not lose that business to another MSP because there's such an accelerated growth and rate of change at the moment.
Yeah, I think there's an element there as well that you, as an MSP, want to become the business that demonstrates to clients, this is how it can be done. I remember when I was running my MSP business, Andy, you know, we used to use electronic signatures and things of that nature that clients, it just weren't commonplace. And by using those technologies, the client would then say, huh, that's interesting. How could we use that ourselves? So we actually turned ourselves into the business that our clients wanted to be like as well. Could you give us some examples of how the Pro Services team have helped an MSP, no names necessary, but with maybe a specific digital transformation project?
Yeah, I mean, we've worked with all kinds of projects. I think I can name one name just sure. to pick on someone, because we've done a case study not too long ago with Single Source ICT. So the guys at Single Source are one of the early adopters of all of the pillars of Pro Services. So they've really set an example of... some partners come to us and say, well, I don't really do Azure or you know, my bag is just Modern Workplace, and I get involved in a bit of SharePoint and Intune and some other things, but as yours, not quite there for us yet. Actually, Single Source saw it as an opportunity to flip that on its head and actually use us for all the things that they couldn't do. So we've done some amazing work with them, a number of different clients over kind of an 18-month period or so already. And they, like I say, have used us across things like SharePoint migrations. There's a data and AI project where we've come in and we've done some discovery for things like Power BI and that type of work for their clients, and some Azure migrations and things, as well as the Modern Workplace stuff that traditionally they would focus on. And what that's allowed for them is for them to deliver uncompromised quality on the services they provide to their clients, adding additional kind of strings to their bow in what they can offer, and do it without any kind of additional risk of letting the client down. So it comes back into that Pax8 message where I'm going to be put to the test here. I'm putting myself up on the spot here, but we help you save time, reduce risk, and make more money. And yes, that really comes to light in the ProServe offering, just as much as the platform, just as much as partner support and everything else we have here. We're all on the same message, and absolutely the reducing the risk, because you know you're trusting on the best experts in the industry that we've got here that can do this on your behalf. We're having conversations right now around white label services and how we do things. Some partners like that. Some partners are happy to say that they're standing on our shoulders and to celebrate that they're working with us. And for me, I'd love to get to a point that we can be that famous in the ecosystem that people know that, oh, these guys are working with Pax8. That's great. There's no question whether you need to white label. So I think that's the dream for me, is that we work with partners in a way that suits them, obviously, and we need to be adaptable and things and constantly learn. But really, single source is a great use case. And there's a case study on the website for anyone wanted to follow up to check that out. They're very complimentary of us, of course, which helps. But as you'd expect from a selected case study, but really any partner that's working with us, we've never had complaints. And realistically, we aim to completely delight them and their customers by tailoring everything we do to whatever they need from us, and really understanding their strengths and weaknesses so we can dovetail and pick the best services in the team. Because our team, in terms of architects these days, not only is there a skills gap and it's difficult to hire these kind of roles, we've seen the CompTIA report recently last year around the digital skills gap and difficulty with hiring. We specifically with the retainer services, you don't need to hire these people initially until you've got that kind of that muscle built within your clients and how you operate as an MSP. So you can use us for a project. You know, if it doesn't suit the internal team and they didn't like it, then I chalk that up as a mistake and move on to something else. But realistically, what we see is the upskilling and onboarding of these new types of services really growing what a partner's capable of. That helps them do that digital transformation piece even more, because they can really back that up that they're strategic advisors and can deliver on all these amazing things too.
Yeah, makes so much sense. And I'm really excited about this. So longtime listeners of Tub Talk, people who've watched my videos and that will see me get visibly excited about this concept of buddying up with other companies to provide services, that perhaps you don't have the resources, you don't have the skills in-house. Every MSP that I'm speaking to has a challenge with recruitment, getting, you know, good quality people in. So this right here is a really good answer to the problem that you're experiencing. My MSP was built off the back of this type of partnership. So I cannot recommend it enough. Andy, Single Source IT, was it the company that you mentioned?
Single Source ICT, yeah.
Where are they based? Are they a UK-based MSP?
Yeah, UK-based. Yeah.
UK-based MSP. We'll include a link to that case study that you mentioned in the show notes for this show as well. So, and also the CompTIA report that Andy mentioned. So we're mentioning a lot of resources here, Andy. I want to make sure if somebody's listening to this or watching this while they're out for a walk or whatever, they don't have to be scribbling notes down. We'll make sure. But I think for MSPs listening as well, it's really important. If you're trying to get your head around, well, how can this type of service help? Go and have a look at the case studies. Go and have a look. Speak to your peers who are using these services already to understand how you can be using it to make your life easier, to make more money. Talking of making life easier, I wanted to ask you a specific, more of a cybersecurity geeky sort of question. Everybody, of course, using cloud nowadays, it exploded, especially after the pandemic. Cybersecurity dominates MSP's agenda for a lot of their time. Tell me about how can, say, Pax8 Pro Services help with the cybersecurity aspect of an MSP's business? What about like hardening M365 tenants, that type of thing? Is that something you can help with?
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. We do all that from outsourced kind of standardized approaches for assessments of tenants through to looking at obviously the industry standards like CIS, CE, C+, that type of thing. Providing reports to basically build a roadmap of remediations and improvements that a partner can go and make. We have obviously a policy there to obviously upskill, and we don't want to keep that as our secret sauce. So those approaches, things that we build out with partners, any kind of things that we can help them build scripts to do this and automate that, we're constantly looking at ways to arm our partners to be able to do this, because there's such demand that we can't do it all. And obviously then going on to that, we can get involved in the hardening in terms of doing that on a partner's behalf in the client tenant, looking at improvements and consulting really on lots of different levels. And I'm going to make it even harder for you in terms of references and things, but I can't talk about cybersecurity without mentioning the amazing work that we do in the cybersecurity masterclasses that ProServer link quite closely with in terms of that. So we've got Mostyn Thomas, which no doubt some of your followers will know for sure. He's on board now in the Pax8 world. And he does a great job of setting out what good looks like and helping our partners understand how to communicate that to clients and how to handle this beast that's come about. It really it's always been there from a security perspective. It's always been best practice, right? But never have the clients asked for it in this kind of way before and really been so aware of it, which is a great thing. But also if you're not ready to deal with that, it's a steep learning curve. So there's lots we can do to help, but there's another resource for you, Richard, to follow up with.
Well, we'll include the link to that, and also Mostyn Thomas. Listeners to this show, longtime listeners, will know and love Mostyn. Mostyn is like the go-to security guy. Such an incredible hire for Pax8. I dropped Mostyn a text as soon as the news came out. I was like, that's a really cool move. But you are building an incredible team of experts there, and people who have got MSP background, people with technical background. It really is impressive to see. I want to go a little bit deeper and talk about another tool that I hear in lots of conversations with MSPs, and that's Intune. I hear it mentioned all the time, and perhaps listeners can get in touch and tell me if I'm wrong here, I don't see too many MSPs really getting to grips with what Intune can do for them. So let's talk about Intune and how that can be used for MSPs. Is that something that you've come across?
Yeah, it's a great one. And I have to caveat, because I've come out and said I'm a techie, but I'm not a modern workplace architect by any means. So do get in touch with us if you want more detail on any of this stuff. But from my experience of Intune, I mean, I grew up and I started working in IT, obviously, in a world where it was all about group policy. And those kind of controls were fascinating, to especially getting into enterprise level and understanding how you can control and govern everything. And I think what's happening more and more now with security and governance is that we're seeing a trend of it being about empowering the user rather than controlling and sort of an authoritarian take on controlling an IT infrastructure. So I love the resurgence of Intune. I think it didn't necessarily, I can say this because it's not a Microsoft call, but I think it just didn't necessarily start off on the best foot. And I think the recent investment into some of the technology, I mean, there's some latest announcements that I haven't read yet from last week that I know a game changer, because everyone said, make sure you read this before going on to talk to Richard Tubb, and I haven't had time.
Well, the good news is I've not read it either, Andy. I'm perfect. Sure our listeners have, but yeah.
So we could pretend this was recording before the announcement. something I really love, and it's just the little details around the difference between MDM and MAM. So for the benefit of the listener that hasn't caught up on Intune as much as I have so far, MDM is the classic mobile device management in terms of corporate control of corporate-owned devices, and realistically, historically, a user using their own personal device, like many small business companies have to do. If you're using your phone to access your emails, then all of a sudden you've signed in, and either that's unpoliced and uncontrolled, which is terrifying for the company, or it's controlled completely by the organization to a point where they can wipe your personal device, which is terrifying for the end user. So mobile app management or application management is an interesting take on that, where the applications and the copying and pasting of data between them and everything on personal devices is controlled at the application level, not at the device level. So you can have Outlook, OneNote, and some corporate applications that you manage on there, and you can control someone being able to copy and paste data from the company Outlook only into OneNote, for example, to start making notes about a reply, or vice versa. So it's really interesting to get that granular level of control. And again, that only comes around from smartphone manufacturers and the OS level on smartphones being so open and customizable for apps to have that control. But it's a great example of empowering IT experiences rather than security getting in the way of people wanting to do their best work. So Intune for me is a great example of a service that really does touch on that digital transformation that really is required now because so many people are working on random devices. The ability there to apply those amazing group policies that we used to love back in the day, to do that at the scale of the cloud now, where devices can be direct dropped to a new user in the middle of Wales somewhere that doesn't come into the office potentially. And you don't have to care whether you're going on site to set that up anymore and things like that. It can all be pre-configured as soon as they log in and all the policies there. But yeah, for me, it gets really exciting when we start talking about personal devices and not giving up control while still having the trust that everyone needs from our baseline from security policies there. So
yeah,
I think Josh told me to say that Josh, our solution architect on my workplace, that even the Mac, the Macintosh kind of support there is much improved these days for Apple devices. So he thinks there's lots of legacy feelings going around. Generally, I think. If you haven't caught up with it yet, then give it a go. Get in touch with us if you're one of the partners and you wanted to get an advisory call in to understand a bit more or something like that. It's a great opportunity to explore now and read those latest updates and see what they're doing, because Microsoft are putting so much research and development and improvements into these kind of services. It's hard to keep up.
Yeah, absolutely. I would go as far as to say if there's one action that people take listening to this, coming out of this call, is to do that, to get in touch with you and say, okay, can you educate us a little bit more on the opportunities with Intune here and with the mobile devices and that, because it really is a growing area. We beat Microsoft up a little bit there. Let's be nice to Microsoft now. And I'm joking, of course, but other technologies that I'm seeing really sort of not take hold yet, but the excitement and the potential for them taking hold with MSPs. Azure Virtual Desktop, Windows 365. Again, I don't see a lot of MSPs grabbing hold of those technologies just yet, but I sense there's a huge opportunity there. And perhaps they're not doing it because of the complexity of the deployment. So can you talk to me from that perspective, Andy, what you're seeing in the marketplace and how MSPs can utilize those technologies?
Yeah, I think... there's going to be another link for you to send with this as well, but I think we'll work our way around there. But there's a massive amount of complexity with Azure. I mean, I was thrown into the Azure architect role that we hadn't done before previously, sort of 6 or 7 years ago. And I had, at that point, I was single point of contact for Microsoft and CSP and Azure and everything that we did. So I've been there and I've faced that kind of learning curve myself firsthand. So I feel your pain. Anyone listening that's really struggling to grasp Azure and how it works and how to cost it, frankly, is the first place you start and normally the first hurdle. It takes time to get to grips with it, and particularly it's not going to align with most of the MSP's business models in terms of charging per user for services that are fixed price per month. It's very much that there's pricing online that everyone can go and see from Microsoft in terms of how much it costs, yet the ability to bake in margin and other things on top of that is a challenge for MSPs to understand where. And there's no, I'd love to say I've got a silver bullet answer in terms of how to approach it, but I think it depends per partner and per client, really, in terms of what you need to do there. So there's a 90 minute or so webinar that I did, which is on Azure demystification with our principal architect on Azure, Jacob Maguire. And links to follow up, but that's an incredible watch in terms of we took what should have been the script in terms of Microsoft Azure is the leading hyperscale cloud provider. We tore that up. There's a little bit of 101 of what Azure is, but it's us having a frank conversation around why nobody's using it enough in the MSP world and what are some of the challenges. And we landed on some really interesting things that we had a few ideas beforehand, obviously, that come up on the graphics on screen, but some of the things that were unscripted in between just us talking, between me and Jacob, we really landed on some ideas there around how you can flip the model on its head. And rather than trying to bake in margin at a percentage base on everything on Azure or looking to fix price and include your margin in there and sort of manage the underlying infrastructure to keep that margin there, there's lots of ways in thinking, okay, let's just do it completely openly and let's not add any margin to the Microsoft Azure services whatsoever. And let's look at value-added services where we actually deliver value on. So let's put our margin where our value is, because we don't add value just reselling Microsoft services. And for me, that's the maybe the hardest. And I'm not expecting that's an easy thing for MSPs to start to adopt. But if you can get to a point where you're that comfortable talking to clients, say, look, we can resell you this. This is the retail price for Microsoft for the Azure services. That in itself is a challenge, because you have to help them understand that it's variable and it will change based on usage and things like that. But yeah, realistically, putting your margin where your value is, I think, is one of the best things to try and focus on when building out products and services for these types of things. And that's, for me, that's the biggest challenge with Azure, because you look at it and it's already, anything you buy on Azure is so well built in terms of every bit of storage is on 3 different storage stamps per data center, per region, paired with a region that's geographically nearby to it. So you could say that Azure Files is similar to Dropbox, but I can guarantee that the underlying storage infrastructure that Microsoft put in place in all of their data centers, it doesn't compare to some of the cheaper storage providers and things that are out there. So it's not always the right use case as well. So, I mean, I could talk all day about Azure, but yeah, I'll give you one more top tip, that if you can get to a point of understanding where things shouldn't be migrated to Azure, then that's the point where you become the Azure trusted provider that everyone comes to and loves. So yeah, I think for me as a technologist, you've got to be agnostic and understand that Azure isn't the place for all infrastructure. And I'm sure Microsoft won't mind me saying this. It's about understanding what really works on Azure will accelerate the adoption, and you'll get more things moving to Azure when you understand what's best placed there.
Yes.
So yeah, that's the key as well, really.
That is a value bomb right there from Andy. And one of my great friends, Craig Sharp, who runs an MSP in Birmingham called Abusi, many years ago, I learned the lesson from him about technology, knowing when to say, no, this isn't a good fit for the technology, rather than trying to shoehorn everything into it. So absolutely couldn't agree with you more on that one. One final question, I guess, on Azure migrations. It can be something that MSPs look at and go, you know, we haven't really got the in-house skills to do this. Do you help MSPs with those type of migrations?
Yeah, absolutely. So to give a bit of an insight, again, I'm talking about Wahive too much, but realistically, it's important, I think, to explain the pedigree of where the team comes from. I mean, just to be really clear, none of us refer to Wahive. I've said Wahive more times today than I have in the last 12 months or 18 months. But to explain the pedigree of the team and where they come from, that was all Wahive did. So we didn't focus on modern workplace license reselling or anything like that. We palmed that away. Realistically, it was about building a hyperscale cloud infrastructure consulting practice. And with that came a really interesting learning curve, obviously, and the ability to really consult on doing migrations best. So our architects go through the same training that the Microsoft architects go through. And normally, if you're a Microsoft employee, you get shipped out to Seattle to do that. But yeah, we just stay in Farnborough and do it, or Bristol. But
who needs Seattle when you've got Farnborough?
But yeah, learning, basically learning to do a migration well, you really need to understand like for like, or lift and shift is sometimes the only option, and that's fine. But understanding where things can be replatformed, refactored, re-architected, those types of, there's all of the R's of architecture migrations, basically at that level on IaaS. But understanding if we've got a SQL database running on a SQL server on premises, could that be an Azure SQL that then gives you some of the platform as a service benefits that may on paper look a little bit more expensive, but when you realize that the backup and DR solutions are all baked into a service like that, actually, if you're doing things properly on premises with all of the continuity and you're looking at your RTOs and RPOs, comparing from a disaster recovery perspective of what's like for like, actually some of the platform as a service offerings there can be really beneficial. So not just doing a lift and shift, but analyzing what's there, how it could be innovated with the latest technologies on Azure. And even things that typically on paper are difficult because they've got complex requirements. Microsoft have got things like for SQL, for example, the managed instances. So that adds like legacy and complex kind of abilities there in the feature set, so it can be compatible with on-premises as much as possible. So there's lots there in terms of detailed kind of discovery that needs to go in. So start with the strategy of what's the business case of why you're migrating, because that's really important, and that might dictate lift and shift is required here because we've got a tight timeline or things like that. and understanding not just what's required today, but what's required in 2 years from now for your client. Maybe the best solution right now might need to look differently, and we don't want to build it again. So understanding that roadmap and then looking at the best architectures suited to those types of requirements, and making sure that we're operationally looking at the best cost optimization there as well. So yeah. Things like scheduling resources. Everyone talks about reserved instances, so I'm not going to lecture you guys on that. Everyone knows that you can basically prepay for a year or 3 years and save some money. But reservations are only so far, and actually scheduling things off that don't need to be on outside of Monday to Friday have a significantly bigger impact than even reservations. So understanding what's really required and getting your head around the fact with Azure as well. Another top tip is that you pay for every second you're using something in Azure. So if you're not committing upfront, then you are paying for the benefit of having the ability to switch something on and turn it off again, and Microsoft have to manage that economy of scale. So
yeah,
looking at what could be switched off or scaled down when you're not using it should be the starting point when you're putting some infrastructure in Azure. You shouldn't ever have a VM running for the full 744 hours per month, flat out at the spec that you need, because that's just traditionally with legacy on-premises hardware. You buy some kit, you think, how many CPUs and how much RAM do we need? What's the storage requirements? And it's pretty simple, really, because you don't necessarily worry about the capacity that's not being used. There's a couple of services in Azure that are sparsely provisioned from like some of the old page blobs and disks that you can attach, but everything else, you pay for the entire capacity you provision. So for every second that's running, you need to understand, does it really need to be at that level? How can I optimize it? And what's the best thing there? So migrations are really complex. To be able to do all of that when a client's saying, I just need to move this server, how much and when, that's why we've got the incredible architects in the team that can do either advisory calls if you're trying to do it yourself. If you're not trying to do it yourself, again, you can outsource and you can work with us on a one-off ad hoc basis, or if you've got lots of clients with these types of projects coming up, then the retainer service is a great opportunity to take 5, 10, 15 hours, that kind of a amount per month. Some partners are taking 60 hours a month to really lean on that team as if they work for you. And of course, that's not to say it's white labeled, but you'll be on first name terms with your friendly Azure architects and your modern workplace experts that come and help you on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah. And again, this sounds like a no-brainer to me. It sounds like absolute gold. I want to continue on the theme of migrations. And I know we could probably do a whole episode, couldn't we, around Azure, around migrations and things like that. But let me throw one out at you that I know MSPs struggle and have struggled with for many, many years now. And that's SharePoint. It's super, super powerful, but can be super, super awkward, especially when you throw OneDrive in there and clients who just want to use SharePoint as though it's like a file structure. What does SharePoint migrations look like for the pro services team? How can you help clients, MSPs, that is, with their client migrations?
Yeah, the most common one we see is essentially looking and deep diving into what kind of data is being used and the sprawl of data storage services currently, and ascertaining what's the best solution for that, whether it's OneDrive or SharePoint. Typically, best practices for things that are shared to go on SharePoint, obviously, and things personal to be on OneDrive, but it's always unique types of data use cases that come up. So it's a discovery piece initially to look at that. The team very often end up doing statement of works for that migration to say, this is how we would approach it. And then, yeah, partners leverage us either on the one-off basis or recurring with lots of clients there to actually outsource to that. Less common, to be frank, but something that's really interesting that goes hand in hand with that is the kind of data strategy conversation. So
okay.
We can also do data strategy workshops for clients that really want to understand the use of data through the business. So we're in a world now where everyone has smartphones in their pockets. Lots of even small medium businesses now have digital interactions with their consumers that they can track logs for and get lots of data from third party sources as well that's relevant to their way of working. But the data strategy workshop takes that a step further and really understands what is all the data sources you have. How are you currently utilizing those? Are you doing business intelligence at just a board level, or does everyone in your business have Power BI at their fingertips to go and explore the data and look at trends in the way that they work to essentially do the best job they can every single day? So that evolution of what BI is really interesting as well from a data AI perspective that kind of goes hand in hand with SharePoint and data and things like that. But yeah, most of them are, it's the enablement piece that's most common that we focus on, but there's always that additional kind of for partners that are looking to help with get help with even more mature types of services, we've got that capability too, which is really cool.
So that's really interesting to me. And can, just to clarify, so you would partner up with the MSP and go into the client to have that conversation with them directly about that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, historically, we've done workshops, and our resource isn't just about enablement and migration solely. We can turn up and help partners that are running workshops to talk to their clients about opportunities as well. So a partner could run a data strategy workshop, for example. I'd happily come and talk at that event and drum up lots of client opportunities for them to then talk to their clients about how they're using data, roll out Power BI, and there's obviously the revenue that comes with the licensing for that, but also the stickiness of the client relationships there is an incredible benefit of really understanding everything you could be doing for your clients and just showcasing it. And just the envisioning sessions around the art of the possible with AI is an incredible piece that really opens the minds of people that this stuff isn't science fiction, it's actually at our fingertips, and you could use it right now as a client of a partner of Pax8 to really set the competition aside and have that competitive advantage.
You've just hit the nail on the head for me there. I think the MSPs who are going to get as excited as I am speaking to you about this are the most progressive MSPs who understand that, yes, support and services is the bread and butter of managed services, but what's going to really differentiate them is the ability to go in and speak to their clients about their business and how, going back to digital transformation, how the technologies can help them gain the competitive advantage, how they can do things faster, better, cheaper than the competition. So I'm so excited about this opportunity, Andy. You know, I'm bubbling with it. I'm really grateful for your time. I know you must be the most in-demand person in the industry at the moment, because trying to carve out an hour of your and my diary was, man, I don't know any AI on the planet that could have done it as well as our team to get us there. And so I'm very conscious of your time. Before you go, though, I've got to ask you a personal question.
Okay.
I heard this rumor. Is it true that you once flew a plane upside down over Stonehenge?
Yes. Pax8, we have our kind of a ritual where we have to do an interesting or weird fact that no one's heard before. And you end up finding some really, really specific, weird and interesting facts, some morbid as well. But yeah, I think one of my original interesting ones was, yeah, I did a... My sister bought me an aerobatic flying lesson. I love planes. I grew up in Farnborough and born and raised there. So aviation is a massive interest of mine. And I went to Andover, the Fruxton circuit there. And there's a chap that has a Slingsby Firefly, does aerobatic lessons. And he says, oh, I love taking people over their houses and where they live. So I said, I live in Farnborough. And obviously being an international airport with lots of private jets coming and going near to Heathrow as well, the guy, face kind of drained and said, well, we can't go over your house. That's a non-starter. How about Stonehenge? So we went to, we flew over to Stonehenge, which wasn't far from there by plane, of course. I absolutely loved it. I flew the plane from start to finish, took off and land. I don't have a pilot's license, but I've done enough lessons that I could get by. I don't know any of the complex controls, but I can hold the stick and I can get by. And we did some stall turns literally over Stonehenge. So we're up, wing over, stall turn, and looking down, and there's the stones right beneath us. It was a pretty incredible experience.
That's amazing. And just to be clear, I want to clarify. So if MSPs want to partner up with Pax8, that's not part of the onboarding process, is it? They don't have to fly with you upside down over Stonehenge?
Absolutely not. But if they're interested, I mean, I've joked that we're going to take people into space as a PR stunt for marketing, part of our Where Business Goes Big kind of space-themed campaign. I'd love to transform a partner that goes so well in terms of the transformation that we do that we can book some Virgin Galactic flights and literally take them into space on that. But let's see where I get with marketing on that one in the future. But
you heard it here first, people. Virgin Galactic flights for Pax8 customers. We'll see where that one goes. But on a more serious note, for any MSP who isn't a Pax8 partner yet, how easy is it for them to sign up? What would you tell them to do next?
Yeah, anyone that's not signed up, I mean, there's so many resources that are going to be attached to this. But if you Google, or if you're like me and you're trying to get early access to ChatGPT within Bing, maybe you've got Bing enabled now. If you use a search engine for get started with Pax8, that will take you to the sign up page as generally the first result on that search. It takes no time at all to sign up. There's absolutely no obligation whatsoever. So you get access to all of the platform and Pro Services is a team that works with any Pax8 partner that's signed up. So you don't have to move everything across tomorrow. You could start with those advisory calls and start speaking to the incredible team that we've got around us here to really make that decision to help you get that across. And if you let them know, I'll almost say with a winking face, that let them know I sent you. But if you mention that you're interested in Pro Services as part of that sign-up process, the amazing cloud generation specialists that onboard new partners will tee us up so one of the team can talk you through it there and then straight away, rather than waste your time if you really need to hear any details that we spoke about today. Essentially, we're people. And a one more resource for you to send out. Your team are going to be even busier than trying to book our calendars here. But there's something that's amazing that we do for people that haven't yet signed up to Pax8 is our launch briefing. So anyone can go and register for that. And depending on where you are in the EMEA region now that we're expanding into here that I'm in, we've got the full English version of that on the 27th of April. Or if you like your launch briefings continental style, then we've got the 26th of April, the day before. We've got the EU launch briefing as well. And that's a good chunk, kind of half a day session going through everything to do with Pax8. All the Pax8 experience stuff that I love, but I don't get the time to talk about enough. They'll cover all of that, and it's a great intro to everything else that we can do. If you haven't signed up yet, that's probably the best place to start.
Agree. And you really are making waves with those. You know, I promote them to the MSP community out there. They sell out super, super quickly. So this is not like, a sales pitch or sales patter or anything. This is really valuable content as well. So if you can't get one soon, keep an eye on the Pax8 website, and there will be another one coming up at some point in the near future. Talking of which, we have mentioned so many resources, so many great bits and pieces for people. I don't want people to be stressing out about having to scribble all these things down. We'll include all of them in the show notes. We've also got a landing page on my website, so tublog.co.uk/Pax8. which includes a load of the resources that we've talked about, plus many other videos, and you're going to find anything that you need to find there. And if you can't, let us know and we'll put something there as well. Andy, this has been absolutely fabulous. I've got a feeling we're going to have to do this again in the very near future to catch up on a lot of the stuff that maybe we only scratched the surface of. Would you come back in the future and talk to me a bit more?
Absolutely. Yeah, maybe we should book it in soon. But it's been a pleasure to speak to you. Really great to have this kind of the voice on your channel and with so many of your followers. It's amazing. And I'm a huge advocate for everything here at Pax8 because of a number of reasons, really. But if it all sounds too good to be true, come and speak to us and you'll find out why. Really, to anyone there that's thinking this guy's probably been paid a lot of money to say things like this. Frankly, it's a personal passion of mine to work somewhere that really is partner-centric and in terms of things we're working on in the future, I know there's stuff coming up already around the Bamboom acquisition and other things that are moving there as well. So that's super exciting. So stay tuned for that. And I'd absolutely love to come back here.
Oh, love it. You know, I say to long-time listeners of this show, you will know that I love shining a light on the positive disruption in our industry. And there are very few companies mixing things up for the betterment of MSPs more than Pax8. So really appreciate your time, Andy. Thanks again.
Cheers, Richard.
Cheers. Hey folks, Richard here. Thanks for listening today. I know you've got a ton of options for who you listen to nowadays, so I really appreciate your support. Do you have any feedback on this episode? Ideas for future guests? Tweet me at Tublog using the hashtag TubTalk. I respond to every tweet and really appreciate your feedback.